All right, we're beginning on the top of Kuf Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph by the two dots. Gemara is referencing to what we said in the Mishnah of Halal. The Mishnah never gives any definition to what the Halal is, and even in the Mishnah, Rashi refers you to the Gemara because it is a Machloket Amoraim here, which is my Halal. What is this Halal in the Mishnah, which is Mitzareif, two other items to comprise the Kibbutz of Tumat Ochlim, but it itself is not Mitamei Tumat Ochlim. So, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Martika. That it is this Martika, which Rashi defines as Gid Hashidra V'Hashavar. It is some sinew that goes along the neck, down the back, probably of the neck, into the wards, the spinal column. And as Rashi notes, it is wide and very white, and it's extremely hard, and nobody eats it. Meaning that it's almost like Eitzba Alma. It's like a piece of wood in there. And that's what the reference to is about the Halal. On the other hand, if you look in the Balei Tosafot, he brings Perush Rabbeinu Chananel Basara Meit, that it is like withered flesh. It is not this Gid that Rashi is referencing to. V'chein Nira Rabbeinu Tam. And he says Rabbeinu Tam agrees with Rabbeinu Chananel. V'lo k'Perush HaKuntris, and not like Rashi explains over here. Their main proof is from a Gemara in Zvachim that speaks about Pigul with regards to the Halal. Speaks about it in the context of an oath, and an oath doesn't have Gidei Atzavar. And so therefore it can't be the explanation of the word here. A Balei HaTosafot back on the Mishnah actually quote Rashi's interpretation and say, Ika d'mfarish mi'gmara, that it is a martiko, perish pekunches Gidei Atzavar. V'i tana gidim v'lo martiko, had the Tana written just gidim and not martiko. If that's what it is, why do you have to write martiko? Why do you have to write Allah? Why do you have to write some word that is cryptic in nature, just write gidim, and we would have known what it was. The Tosafot says there would have been a problem. Hava mina de martaka shi kasheh lo mitzareif. Had you just written gidim, you would have thought that that references to other gidim that aren't so hard. But the martaka, which is so hard, that would not be mitzareif. It's differentiated even from the other gidim. V'itana alal, if you just wrote alal, hava mina shar gidim, Metamo afilu tumat nevelot, because then they would have thought this is not metamei tumat nevelot, but it is metamei tumat ochlim bitziruf. Then the other gidim are even metamei tumat nevela, and that's why it didn't write alau. So that's instead it wrote ha alau, and that's what gives us the martika over here, which is defining for us that it is this gidat savar according to Rashi that has this unique property that it is mitzareif. The tumat ochlim, not differentiated from other gidim. On the other hand, it's not mitamei tumat nevelot, neither are the other gidim. And that's what the reference is to over here. Rish Lakish amar, basar shepalatato sakin. It is the flesh that is left on the hide when they're flaying the animal. Sometimes you don't get it perfectly when you're flaying the animal, and some of the basar sticks to the oars, sticks to the hide. And that's the reference of the halal, these little pieces of meat that are on the or on the hide. Meiteve, this pasuk that we have in Eo, ve'ulam atem toflei shaker rofei elio kulchem. Eo is responding to his friends and saying how worthless their advice is. He says, you are toflei sheker, forgers of lies. Or as Rashi says over here, mechabre divrei sheker, you are conjuring up these mistruths. Rofei elio kulchem. You are all physicians of no value. That's what the word elio means. It means of no value over here. Meaning that you are saying something that is not efficacious towards what I have. You are trying to present over here. You're not presenting anything that's going to rectify the situation. And of course, the Gemara is focused on the word elio, which is spelled similar to alau. And that implies that it's something that has no rifuah, something that has no cure to it. And as Rashi notes over here, when you're speaking about the Gidei Atzavar, that makes sense. Because there's nothing to do. They're a piece of wood, and it's not going to change anything that they're a piece of wood. So that's something that has no rifuah. When you're speaking about the basar that peels away with the hide, over there, Rashi claims that sometimes when you have flesh that pulls away, whether it's from an animal or a human being, when you put it back in place, it takes. And it's able to grow back, and it's able to regenerate itself when you put it back. So too over here, even though the basar is pulled away with the hide, it wouldn't be called something that has no rifuah, because they're would be times where you could put it back and it would regrow. So bishmalamandamar martuka hainudalab bar refua. That's why we consider it or classify it as lab bar refua, because it's a gid, according to Rashi, according to the Rabbeinu Hananel, it's basar meit. It is withered flesh. It's not coming back to life. There's no cure for this item. Elamandamar basar shiplatadot sakin. If you're speaking about the flesh that's left on the hide, bar refua. Sometimes it has the capacity to regrow. If you place it on the individual or on the behemah, it would take again. Allow the grah to kuliyam alo plige. The Gemara now narrows their machloket significantly, and we'll do the same in a second in the other direction. But at this point, the alal of the pasuk, everybody agrees that that is a reference to the gidei atzabar martakor, the basar meit. Ki plige balal de matnite. They argue about the alal that's mentioned in our Mishnah. In divrei chachamim are different than the divrei the krah. The Mishnah uses alal in one way, the pasuk uses it in a different way. Everybody agrees the alal of the pasuk is a reference to either the gidei atzabar or basar meit. The question is, in the Mishnah, what does alal mean? Tashma. What about the latter part of our Mishnah? The latter part of our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, and this is we're going to speak about tomorrow, Rabbi Yehuda Shita, halal amikunas. If the alal is gathered together, im yesh kezayit b'makom echad, if there is a kezayit in a single location, chayavin alav, then you are chayav for it. Baya Tosafot make the point over here, but chayavin alav, even though it really has nothing to do with chayavin alav, it really has to do with whether it's tamei tumat nevelot versus tamei tumat uchlim. Our Mishnah says that these items are mitamei tumat uchlim, not mitamei tumat nevelot. And Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says it's even mitamei tumat nevelot. So why not just say that? Why are you saying chayavin alav and not mitamei tumat nevelot? The Tosafot says, and it'll become important in his disagreement with Rashi in a minute, that the lo tema midrabanan, so that you don't say that's a din derabanan. Achi kamar chayavin alav. Chayavin alav indicates that you are going to be held accountable for this. That means something midoraita. Had you say that it's metamei tumat nevelot, that could have meant that midrabanan it's metamei tumat nevelot. So he wanted to indicate that it is a level deoraita. And that's what Rashi says, chayavin alav mishum nevela. Your chayav for nevela, ben she'ochlo, ben she'nogeabo. Whether you eat it, you're going to be chayav for nevela. Whether you touch it, v'nichnas the migdash, and then you enter into the migdash afterwards. Upaligat matnitin. And obviously Rabbi Yehuda argues on our Mishnah, or the Tanakhama, or Mishnah Tani, avalot tumat nevelot. Mishnah says that it is mitamei tumat ochlim, but not tumat nevelot, and Rabbi Yehuda is obviously in disagreement with that. He thinks it is mitamei tumat nevelot. Now the Gemara says, "Va'amar Rav Huna, who should console?" That's only if he actively gathered it together, as Rashi says, "De'achshave." When you gather those pieces together, you show that there is significance in this item. So, if you had not gathered them together, then the default would have been that it's not significant; it's an insignificant item. And since it's an insignificant item, it will not have a din of nevela. Even Rabbi Yehuda agrees that that does not have a shem nevela. The only time it's going to have a shem nevela is you make it into basar chashuv. So you have to gather it together, you bring it or consolidate it. That's what makes it into something significant and maintains the shem nevela. If it lost the shem nevela, you can't bring nevela back. Once nevela doesn't happen, it doesn't come later on. It happens at the moment of death. That's when nevela devolves upon the item. But when you gather it together, what you show is retroactively, you thought that this was basar. If it's basar, it's basar nevela. But as Rashi points out, had it been that it was gathered together by itself, or some little kid brought it together, and you weren't interested in it, that wouldn't change the fact that it's insignificant. It has to be that you do it actively. Bishlama the mandamar basar shiplatato sakin, hainu dechi'ita kezayit mechayev. According to the one who says that it's the leftover pieces of flesh on the hide, it makes sense then if you bring it together that you have a kezayit in your chayav. Alamanda Amar Martuko, the one who says it's either Gidat Savar Gorantarashi or Basar Amate, according to the Rabbeinu Hananel, ki ika kezayit mayhavi. What's the difference between whether there's less than a kezayit or there's a full kezayit? Eitz ba'almahu. It's not basar. You can't change the fact that it is not basar. There are certain things where you can make them into basar after the fact. But when you do that, they're already post-nevela. Meaning that if it was something that was not a nevela, like the gidat savar, let's say for instance, if you could cook the gidat savar, make it soft again and then eat it, That doesn't change the fact that it wasn't nevela at the time of the death because it was inedible at that point. The fact that you make it edible later makes it or gives you the access to tumat ochlim. It doesn't change the fact that there's no tumat nevela over here. So if it's eitz v'alma, even quote unquote your akshavei later on, that doesn't change the fact that it's eitz, that it is wood. And you're not going to have any tumat nevela. Again, if you can bring it to a point where it's edible, maybe you'll have tumat ochlim prospectively. But nevela is definitely not an issue over here. And even in some of these cases, we wouldn't say betelo dato etzel kol adam, that even if this guy's crazy, we're not going to make it into tamei tumat ochlim even, because nobody would eat this, and nobody would consider this to be food. So that's a problem in explaining it as martukah. How is that going to fit into the shita at Rabbi Yehuda? Where it says, alim at Rabbi Yehuda, lo plige. They don't argue in the shita of Rabbi Yehuda. Ki plige, alim at Rabbonon. They argue in the shita of Rabbonon. So now we've narrowed it from the other side. With regards to allowing the Tanakh, even Reish Lakish agrees that the definition there is martaka. And now when it comes to Rabbi Yehuda's shita in the Mishnah, even Rabbi Yochanan agrees that it's got to be that it's speaking about the basar, shepalat tosakin. That's what Rabbi Yehuda is referencing to. The question now becomes, Lashon of Halal, in the perspective of the Tanakama. Is the Tanakama speaking about the Halal of the Pasuk? Or is he speaking about the Halal of Rabbi Yehuda? Halal means both things. And so he could be speaking about both. So that's what the Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Martaka Nami Mitztari. Rabbi Yochanan says the Tanakama is speaking about both forms of Halal. That means both the Basar Shepalat Tosakin like Rabbi Yehuda, and the martuka that we mentioned from the pasuk. That's what the Tanakhama says. Both of those, according to him, can be mitzdareif to tumat ochlim, but they themselves do not have tumat ochlim, and it applies to both of them. That's tumat ochlim and not tumat nevelot. To which Rabbi Yehuda says, at least with regards to the basar on the hide, you have to agree to me if it's a kazayit together, and Rabbi Huna qualifies it and says, v'hu shekan so, that it should have tumat nevela. So Rabbi Yehuda is only addressing one of the two types of halal that the Tanakhama spoke about. Because with Martaka, I agree with you, Rabbi Yehuda says, there's nothing to talk about. But with regards to the Masha Poatato Sakin, there should be a different din. And that's how Rabbi Yehuda is arguing according to Rabbi Yochanan. Reish Lakish Amar, Davka Basar Shepoatato Sakin, Ava Martaka Lo Mitztareif. Reish Lakish says, that's exactly the machloki between the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda. It's all about the flesh on the hide. Martaka doesn't even enter the world of the Tanakhama. The entire Mishnah is speaking about that, both the Tanakhama and Rabbi Yehuda. The Alal Dekra, yeah, the Pasuk, that's an Alal speaking about the Gidei Tzavar, the Basar Meit. But other than that, it's not relevant in our Mishnah. Now, Rashi before said that when Rabbi Yehuda says you are Chayavin Alav, he says you're Chayavin Alav Mishum Nevela, because it was Nevela, whether you eat it or whether you come into contact with it and become Tameh. Tosafot is bothered by that statement of Rashi because it was in the statement of the Gemara that says v'hu shekan so. That's only if you gathered it together, which is achshavei. You gave it significance. Now, with regards to the world of Tumah, we find achshavei to be a meaningful term. But in the world of Isur, achshavei has no meaning. Achshavei only has relevance when your input is meaningful. Which is, in the world of Tumah and Tahara, your relationship with the object does determine whether it's Tameh Tahor sometimes. And similarly, with regards to the world of Nidarim, your perspective might have impact on what the designation of this item is. But in the world of Isur, your feelings are meaningless. It's an objective thing. Is it Asur or is it not Asur? And therefore the Balei HaTosafot say, Vehu Shekanso, Tema, Mai Shaycha Machshava LeIsur. Why does that matter that you are makshivit when it comes to isur? It says the kain ira to chayavin alav lo mayri leinyan achila. With regards to eating, Rabbi Yehuda's chayavin alav is not what he's speaking about. The lo tzarich kanso, you don't even have to gather it together over there. Aval leinyan im nichnas lemikdash kamo shaper shakunches v'lashon acher, that is meaningful. V'adelo nakat tamei. So then, why doesn't it just say tamei? The problem you have here is Chayavin Alav makes it sound like it's a generic statement, both about the Achilah and about the Tumah. This goes back to what Tosafot said before. The reason it says Chayavin Alav, it's so you don't say it's the Rabbonon, but it is the Oraita. Because that's what Rashi focused on. Chayavin Alav makes it sound like you're Chayav. Chayav means if you eat it, you're going to be Chayav. if you go into the Mikdash when you're Tameh, you're going to be Chayav. That's why Rashi read it as being both of those. Tosafot says that's incorrect. Only read it with regards to Tuma. The reason he used Chayavin Olav, which is a Lashon of Isur, and not of Tuma, is because it wanted to indicate that it was the Uraita. V'cheinira, and he says, I think I'm right. Di Achila, if you're speaking about Achila, came into Achlo, Ein Lacha Kinus Gadol Mizeh. If you eat it, there's no bigger achshave or significance of bringing it together than eating it. That's the clearest indication that you think it's basar, is because you're eating it. You don't need to bring it together and do some other external input on the item in order to give it its significance. By the mere fact that you're eating it shows that it is basar. And then by definition, that it means that you're going to be chayav for nevela. So that's an important distinction between Rashi and Tosafot over here as to whether the hukish kanso is relevant to the eating of nevela. According to Rashi, even the eating of nevela requires hukish kanso. You have to be achshave. Tosafot is bothered by that fact that how can you have an achshave by an isur? Therefore, Tosafot says the kanso is only relevant by the world of tumah. Rabbi Yehuda would say, if you ate it, you don't even need hukish kanso. It's clear indication that it is a nevela or basar nevela if you are eating it. Right now the Gemara says, "Hai basar shplatato sakin hechidami." This flesh that is left over on the hide, what exactly is this scenario over here? Ida chashiv alei, if you are considering it, meaning that you think it's basar that you're going to want to use, afilu ba'anpei nafshei mitamei. So then why do you need it to be mitstaref something else? It is basar. If it's basar, it itself should be subject to tumat ochlim. Our Mishnah indicates items that they themselves do not have a din of tumat ochlim, but they're able to be mitzareif, ancillary to something else, they can add up to kabeitza. If this is classified as basar, then what do you need it to be ancillary? It could be the item itself. It itself could be subject to tamei tumat ochlim. And that's what Rashi says over here. The kaimelon, the makshava shabi uchla. Anytime you have a makshava on something to eat it, it makes it into an ochel. Komide de matze de mikle, as long as you can't eat it. Right? Obviously, I said before, even sometimes when you make something into an ochel and you want to eat it, if nobody eats it, it's not edible, then betela de hotel, it's koladam. But if it's edible and you want to eat it, then it's ochel. Va'afagav de la borche. Even though most people don't do that. So for instance, Rashi brings the example of a hide. A hide, if you cook it for a very long time, it softens to the point where you can eat it. So then, if you do something like that, you cook up the hide to the point that it's soft and you want to eat it, for you, it's a din of ochel. So because people can't eat it, it's edible at this point, and you've been machshivit to be ochel because of the way that you treated it, the way that you dealt with it. And so to over here, if you want to eat this flesh, even though normal people would just let it go and say, forget it, it's not worth my time, I don't care about it, but nevertheless, if you considered it for akhila, then it's ochel. And why is there even a question here about being mitzareif? It itself should have the classification of ochel. The only thing he can do is make it into tamei tumat ochlim. You can't change the fact that it wasn't a nevela. There's a distinction between, and this is what I mentioned before, if you are retroactively giving it a status of basar, then it can even have tumat nevela, according to Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, for tumat ochlim, that's a prospective status that you grant the item. So if it was inedible, and then you changed it to edible, then yes, it'll have tumat ochlim, it won't have tumat nevela. Over here, by the basar, according to Rabbi Yehuda, when you gather it together, then you're achshave retroactively, so that it even has tumat nevela. The Tanakhama obviously disagrees with that, and says that it is basar only mitzad tumat ochlim, prospectively, not retroactively, and that's obviously their machloket, is whether you can be akshave retroactively to make it into tumat nevela. But at least, the Gemara is saying it should have tumat ochlim over here, because you're machshivit. Lo chashiv alei, betulei batlei. And if you don't consider it, if you're not thinking about eating it, then it's insignificant. It's something that you don't consider to be edible or that you will eat. And therefore, it shouldn't have tumat ochlim. That's what everybody else does with it. They don't care about it, and therefore, it shouldn't have tumat ochlim. So Rabbi Avin v'Rabbi Meisha, they have a machloket as to what the reason over here, it's only mitzareif, and not inherently, does it have tumat ochlim? Chadamar miksato chishev alav. You have two views, or two versions of this. We'll read Rashi first. Rashi claims over here that there is a kabetza worth of this basar floating around the hide. But you only intend to eat a portion of that basar. You're not going to eat all of it. So you don't have a kibetza worth of basar. And that's why over here, there's no chashivut to in and of itself, because it's less than the threshold kibetza. And that's why you need it to be mitzarev to something else. So when he has a makshava on a part of it, not for a whole kibetza, and we don't know which part he had the makshava on, then the entirety here, which is a kibetza, is not going to be tamei tumat ochlim, because you don't have sufficient ochlim here to reach the threshold of a kibetza. But together with something else, you can add up what you know the person had in mind to make it tumat ochlim, that you can add to another item to be mashlim a kibetza, because amongst all that you have here, there's at least a portion of it which we know is tamei tumat ochlim, and that should be able to be mitzarev to other items.
So that's Rashi's explanation of the concept behind mixato chishev alav.
V'chad amar, mixato palatato chaya, u'mitzato palatato sakin.
Rashi explains over here that an animal came and took a bite out of the ore, out of the hide of the animal, and with it came off some flesh. And then you also have him flaying the animal afterwards, and then some flesh that's left on the hide.
The person had no intent over here. There was no makshava at all. But a portion of the basar is on the ore because of an animal that attacked it or bit into the ore of the animal, and that left some of the basar detached from the basar along with the ore. In addition to that, when he's playing the animal, there are also pieces of basar that are there.
Any flesh that is together with the hide doesn't have tumat nevela. Just like the hide itself does not have tumat nevela, so too any flesh that is on the hide doesn't have tumat nevela. That's the view of Rabbi Akiva. So by definition here, we're not talking about tumat nevela, no matter which basar you speak about, whether it's the basar that the knife cut off, or whether it's the basar that the chaya caused to have flesh on the ur.
Afterwards, when it comes to the hide, he can't tell the difference between them. He's already got the basar, can't tell the difference between them. Mistoma, we would assume that which the chaya took off, he would not be mevatel. We would assume that he would be classified as basar. The part that was from the flaying, he's mevatel it because he doesn't care about it. That's the normal way that things happen, and he doesn't consider that to be basar. So now, these two items in of themselves can't, even if they are a kibetza, can't make you tamei tumat ochlim, because mixed in there is some basar that has chashivut because it was from the chaya, some of it that does not have chashivut because it was from the flaying. But you do know that in that combined amount, there is a certain amount that came from the chaya. You don't know which part of it is, but you know there's a certain amount. That amount then could be mitzarev to other basar in order to make it that you reach that threshold of a kibetza.
That's the second answer. Many Rishonim question that explanation because Rashi says you have a large amount of basar there and you only chishev on a portion of it and not on the other portion. The question they ask is, why isn't this true by any tumat ochlim? All Rashi is saying is that you have less than a kibetza worth of tumat ochlim. So it can't be tamei by itself. It can be mitzarev to something else. Any basar, any ochel is like that. If you have less than a kibetza, it itself can't become tamei tumat ochlim. But together with something else, you can reach the level of a kibetza. So what's the chiddush over here? So if you look in the Mesorta Shas, he says, Ayin Rashal, Sheitik Gilyon Rashi Yashan. He had a different version of Rashi, which is also an interpretation that's brought by other Rishonim, which is that it's got to do with the basar that you were not machshiv. Say there is a bunch of basar there, and you only want mixato. You only want a portion of the basar that's there. So you have a machshava to take a portion, but you don't define which portion it is. Over there, the portion that you didn't want is what we're speaking about. Not the portion that you did want, but rather the portion that you didn't want. That is not enough to be tamei tumat ochlim, but it is enough to be added to tamei tumat ochlim, to be an ancillary item that can be added. Similar to other items that are mentioned in our Mishnah. The items that are mentioned in our Mishnah are not ochlim inherently, like the kornayim, the talfayim. All those items are not necessarily edible, and they're not necessarily something that you would eat. So why are they mitzareif? Because either they're a shomer, they're a yad, they have some connection that makes them ancillary to a item that would be ochel. And similarly over here, even though they're part of the basar, you're not machshiv, you don't care about it, that basar that's on the or. Nevertheless, so by itself, it's not ochel. But together with something of more significance that adds up to a beitza, that would be added to it, and that would be part of the beitza that you need over here. And that's the way that again, they have it in the Girsa of Rashi Yashan, but it's also an explanation that is quoted by other Rishonim. Right, so now the Gemara continues and says, Tanan Hotom, if a Mishnah in Tarot, Makartom Vehatsipor Nayim, Makartom, if you look at Rashi, he says, beak, belaz. It's the modern Hebrew today, it's the beak of the bird, Vehatsipor Nayim, and the nails. Tosafot on the Mishnah spoke about why these were not mentioned in our Mishnah. Mitam'im u'mitam'im. They can bring tuma and they can convey tuma. Meaning if the sheretz touches them, they will bring tuma to the remainder of the oaf. And if the oaf is tamei, it will then allow the tuma to be conveyed through it to other items. U'mitstarfim. And they're also mitstareif to make up the kebetza of ochlin. So now, if you're speaking about an item that is a yad, and then it only has the capacity to bring and to convey tuma, it's not mitzareif. And the beak would seemingly be something that is a yad, because it itself is not protecting anything of basar. And number two is, it is also not edible in and of itself. So the Gemara says, chartum eitz ba'almohu. It's a piece of wood. If it's a piece of wood, then how is it mitzareif to convey tzat uklim? So Amar Rabbi Elazar, Bechartum tachton. It's the lower beak. Mara says, tachton nami eitz ba'almohu. The lower beak is also a piece of wood. They're both hard pieces of bone, and they shouldn't have any application to being mitzareif to matochlim. Amar Papa, tachton shel elyon. It's the lower part of the upper part. As Rashi explains over here, it's a reference to the soft part that is below the upper beak, or in essence, the palate. And that's what it's a reference to, which is an area that is soft, and that could be mitzareif. Most people don't eat it. It's not eaten of itself, but it is something that is, can be ancillary, or something that can be added to the tumat ochlim. Tzipor naim. Again, nails. Why should nails be something that's mitzareif to tumat ochlim? They're not edible. They don't do anything that should be helpful. Amalazar makom hamuvlaim bivasar. It is in the place where the nails are encapsulated by the basar. So in the place where they're not covered by the basar, the nails are meaningless in terms of the world of tumah and tumat ochlim. In the place where they're encapsulated by the basar, then they become a shomer, or something that would be eaten along with the basar. And in that capacity, they can be mitzareif to the kebetzat ochlim. Now, the Gemara says here, karnayim. The Mishnah in Tarot doesn't mention karnayim, and Tosafot goes out of his way to say that the Girsa of the Mishnah in Tarot does not include karnayim. He says that here, he says it back on our Mishnah before, so he says that the reason they brought karnayim over here is a reference back to our Mishnah. What's the significance of the karnayim in our Mishnah? Why should they also be mitzareif to tumat ochlim? They are not edible items, the horns. Samar Papa, b'makom shechotchim yotzei me'en dam. This is what we explained on the Mishnah. It's a place where if you sever the horns, the animal would bleed. Or in essence, they're functioning as a shomer in that location. They're protecting the basar that's below there. That part of the horn, that's the part that is classified as being a shomer and can be mitzareif. And we saw in the Mishnah that the same is true of the talpaim, except the difference being that the talpaim, the entire hoof, is considered to be a shomer for the basar that's down there. But the kornayim are only the part where if you cut it and blood would come out, that's where they're considered to be a shomer. The remainder of the karnayim, the remainder of the horns, would not have that classification. All right, so now the Mishnah noted that we have two examples of where there's tumat ochlim and not tumat nevelot. One of them was all of these items that were mentioned in the Mishnah that are not classified as basar, and therefore they don't have tumat nevela. But on the other hand, they are something that is either a shomer, yad, or ancillary to the ochlim. Therefore, they can be added to tamei tumat ochlim to get you to the kebetza, which is obviously not true by the nevela. They don't have any impact by nevela. The Mishnah then said, piyotzibo. We have a similar scenario where if a Jew shechted a non-kosher animal for a goy, and Rashi over there said that those four qualifications are absolutely necessary, that it is a Jew that is performing shechita on a non-kosher animal for a goy. All four of those qualifications are important. Rashi over here again explains that because of the significance of each of those items, which is a Jew that is shechting, shechita for him is meaningful because an act of shechita, if he did it on a kosher animal, would make the animal ready to eat immediately. Shechita is the procedure by which you're allowed to eat an animal. Once you've shechted the animal, you're permitted to eat it, even though the animal, quote-unquote, isn't dead. Number two, it has to be a Jew doing it, because a Jew and Shechita, the two items, are connected together. Jews have relevance within the world of Shechita. Shechita is relevant to the Jews. It's not relevant to other parties, because they're not mechayav to do Shechita. It has to be a non-kosher animal, because by a kosher animal, once the Jew shechs it, it's deemed dead completely for the Jew, and it would take on all the character traits of whatever a dead animal has immediately after Shechita. The reason over here that there is some sort of delay in the situation is because of the fact that the Jew can't eat it, and neither can the Goy eat it, because a Goy only has permission to eat something once it's dead, not Shechita. Shechita is not relevant to him. It has to be done for a Goy, because a Goy can eat the non-kosher item. So for that reason, you have an interim stage, which is post-Shechita, prior to the death of the animal. In that interim stage, the animal can receive Tumat Ochlim, but it won't have Tumat Nevela. Tumat Nevela will only kick in once the animal's dead. That's what triggers Nevela. On the other hand, because Shechita for a Jew is significant and has a threshold for a Jew, then when the Jew does this to a non-kosher animal on behalf of the Goy, in his mind, he's doing it to make it into Ochel afterwards. And since the Goy can eat the Nevela, then it takes on the status of Tumat Ochlim between the time of the Shechita, completion of the Shechita, and the time of the death of the animal. That interim stage has Tumat Ochlim, but not Tumat Nevela. And that's what the Mishnah says, Kayotzebo. Here's another example of items that are subject to Tumat Ochlim that are not subject to Tumat Nevela. So that's what we're speaking about here. And again, Rashi goes through all of this explanation that we just did. He explained it on the Mishnah, and he explained it here again. The only thing that he adds here, which will become apparent in the Gemara later on, is that this has a two-way street. It's true of a Jew that shechs a non-kosher animal. It's also true of a Goy that shechs a kosher animal for a Jew. Even though the Goy Shechita is not successful in making it kosher, because only a Jew can do Shechita, nevertheless, his Shechita does render it into Ochlim, even though it won't become a Nevela until the animal is actually dead. And that's because Shechita is relevant by kosher animals and by a Jew. So again, in all these scenarios, you have something that Shechita is workable in that situation, but it's missing one factor. In the one area, Shechita is meaningful by non-kosher animals, but it's a non-kosher animal, so that's why it's irrelevant. In the other case, it's a non-Jew doing Shechita on a kosher animal for a Jew, so because it's a Goy doing it, it doesn't work, the Shechita, but it does have significance for Tumat Ochlim. So those are the two scenarios where it has significance in terms of Tumat Ochlim. But the Tumat Ochlim will happen immediately, but the Nevela will not happen until the animal dies. So now, the Gemara explains, Amar Rav Asi, Shonim, there are Tanaim that believe, Israel bitmeya, when it's a Jew by a non-kosher animal, Bovin kochavim bitorah, and a Goy that's doing Shechita by a kosher animal, Tzrichim machshava vehechsher. Mayim im makom acher. They require machshava, meaning that you require them to intend for this to become Ochlim, and you also need Hechsher the Kabal Tumah. As Rashi explains over here, that the reason you need this is because normally Dam Shechita would provide you with the Hechsher that you need. But over here you don't have Dam Shechita. When it's a Jew doing a non-kosher animal, it's maybe Shechita in his mind, but halachically you haven't done Shechita. And the same is true the other way around. The Novi Kochavim doing it by a kosher animal, it might be called Shechita, but halachically it has no significance, it's not Shechita. And therefore the dam that it comes out of the animal at that point is called dam mate, or dam magafeto, which is blood from a wound, because the only dam that is called a mashke is dam chalalim, or dam Shechita. And that's because of the psukim that render those items like a mashke, which is dam chalalim yishteh, or by Shechita it says, aharis tishpachenu kamayim. But that is only true if you make it into a chalal, which Rashi says from the Gemara in Sota, is only when you make it into a gistera min atzavar. And number two is, you only have al haaretz b'tishpachenu kamayim when you have a shechita hareuya. So, in order to have dam that will be machshir, you need to do a proper shechita. Otherwise, whatever dam you have here is not dam chalalim, it's not dam shechita, it's dam hameit or dam migafato. This is the equivalent of blood from a wound or blood from a dead animal, which don't have the status of a mashke, And therefore, they're not makshir, the animal over here. And that's why you need an alternate liquid to do the hekshir. In addition, you require makshava, because there's no default. As opposed to Yisrael, that is shechting a kosher animal, then you don't need any makshava, because the Jew is shechting a kosher animal, which is going to be mutar for him. It's clear that his intent is to eat the animal, and therefore, you don't need any makshava to make it into ochlim, or have to be tamei tumat ochlim. It automatically will happen. And the same thing in reverse is an odu rei kochavim by its meyah. No matter what he thinks, he can't change it into an ochel. For him, it's a sur until Avram and Achai disappears, which is when the animal is dead. So in the case of a Jew by Torah, you don't need makshava because it's food, and that's what the Jews checked me for. By a goy, it doesn't matter what he thinks. Until it's dead, it's not food by a non-kosher animal. The only question is, in these mixed scenarios where it's a Jew shechting a non-kosher animal or a non-Jew shechting the kosher animal. Over there, we say that the shechita can convert it into an ochel if there's makshava, if there's intent over there. So you need intent. Beyond the intent, you also need hekshir in the kabel tumah, because it doesn't have the status of halachically dam shechita. Since it doesn't have the status of dam shechita, it's not makshirit. And therefore, you need a separate hekshir, the kabel tumah, with regards to these ochlim. Mar says, hekshir lamali. Why do I need hekshir, the kabel tumah over here? Sofo the tamei tumah chamura. That in the end, it's going to be tamei, a high level of tumah. B'choshu sofo the tamei tumah chamura. Anything that in the end will have a high level of tumah, lo bayi hekshir. Does not require hekshir, the kabel tumah. That's because it's a unique facet of the ochlim is that they are not mekabel tumah at the level of an ava tumah. You cannot make ochlim into an ava tumah. Even if a mate that is an avia bota tumah comes into contact with the food, it does not make the food into an ava tumah, the tamei adam v'kelim. When we learn out from the pasuk in Parshat Chukat that if you come into contact with a mate, you can then convey that tumah to an adam, that is something that you could otherwise be mitaher. So something that you can go to the mikvah and be mitaher is subject to tumah that then can be conveyed and make like an adam or a kelim tameh or make them into an ava tumah. Something that can't go to the mikvah, can't become tahor that way, is not subject to ava tumah. So that's what the Gemara says with regards to Parshat Chukat. There it says, Yatsu ochlim u'mashkim u'kli cheres. Ochlim u'mashkim u'kli cheres hol v'ein lehem tahara b'mikveh. Since they don't have ability to be tahor mikvah, ein asim ava tumah. They never become an ava tumah. So here you have ochel that never can become an ava tumah. It requires hekshir, the kabel tumah. So from there you learn two things. First of all, that it requires hekshir, the kabel tumah. But also you learn that's only because it's not an ava tumah or something that can't reach an ava tumah. That means that something that will have a status of ava tumah does not require hekshir, the kabel tumah. The Tana Rabbi Yishmael, b'chi yutan mayim al zera. When you put water onto the zera, mazraim shein sofam l'tamei tumah chamura. Just like in the end, food items, zraim, are never going to reach tumah chamura, ava tumah. And they tzrichim hekshir. That's what needs priming to get tumah. Av ko shein sofam l'tamei tumah chamura. So too, only items that will never reach that level of ava tumah, tzrich hekshir. They require hekshir, the kabel tumah. As opposed to items that will reach ava tumah, like this animal that's going to turn into an avela. And that's the issue over here. In the end, this animal will turn into an avela. An avela is an av hatumah. So that means if it's going to turn into an avela in the end, you don't need hekshir the kabel tumah. And that's the Gemara's question over here. I understand maybe why you need makshova. What I don't understand is why do you need hekshir the kabel tumah? Even though right now it's only going to be ochlim, and later on it'll be an avela, that's sufficient that you don't need hekshir up front for the ochlim, because in the end it's going to reach tumah chamura. And that's the nature of the Gemara's question. V'tani amar Rav Yosi, v'pnei amai amru, nevela tov tor, tzvicha makshava, v'ena tzvicha yachsher. One of the items mentioned in that Mishnah and Tarot, with regards to of tor, that's a nevela, over there it says that of tor, that is a nevela, how do you know that it needs makshava, but doesn't need yachsher? An of tor is not tamei, tumat nevela, when you come into contact with it, when you carry it, it does not have your classic dinim of tumat nevela. The only time you're tamei tumat nevela with regards to nof tor is when you eat it and you swallow it. When you're swallowing it, it makes you tamei and it makes your begadim tamei. Other than that, it doesn't have any tumat nevela. So now, before that point where you swallow it and you have tumat nevela, the oaf has no tumah associated with it. But it could have tumat ochlim if you consider it for achila. And that's what the Mishnah says, that it's tzricha machshava. If you intend to eat the bird, then you can convert it into tumat ochlim. Obviously, this is a Jew, he can't eat it, it's an nevela. So the question is, if a goy would eat this, or the goy intends to eat it, then you will have it have a status of ochlim. And as Rashi notes over here, the reason you need machshava is because the default status of a of nevela is that it won't be eaten. The Mishnah says, with regards to that, that's only true in the kfarim, in the villages. But in the cities where there are ample eaters, plenty of people there, and people who would eat, non-Jewish people that would eat this oak nevela, then it's the stam or the default status as it is, tamei, tumat ochlim, because there are people that would eat it. In that Mishnah, it says, it needs a machshava, veina tzricha echsher, but it doesn't require extra the kabel tumah, even though you're making it into an ochel. The reason being is because, ipnei, shusofolu tamei, tumah chamura. Because in the end, when you do swallow the oak, it's going to be mitamei tumat nevela, which is in avatumah. It's mitamei adam and bigadim if you eat it. And therefore, you don't need hechsher. So that's the proof to this. So now, what are we going to do about our situation? Why in our situation do you require hechsher if it's going to be sofola tamei tumat chamura by the nevela? Amachizkiya, hova yachol the gorura, ula midal pachot mikizayit. Since you could cut it up and put it at less than a kizayit, the way Rashi explains this over here is, you could slice it up into pieces and pieces that all would be less than a kezayit's worth, and therefore there would be no tumat nevela. So in that period of time between the shechita and the death of the animal, you could quickly cut it up into pieces and make it something that is less than a kezayit each. You put it through a meat grinder in that period of time, and then it would be less than a kezayit each, and therefore there would be no tumat nevela. An incredible statement, because the difficulty and probably the impossibility of this happening, but that potential in of itself makes it that there isn't a guarantee that there is going to be a tumah chamura over here, and therefore there is a requirement for hechsher. That's Rashi's explanation. The Baal Tosafot say Rashi went too far. You don't need to cut up the animal into pieces that are less than a kezayit worth. Rather, you need to make sure that there's not a kezayit worth left on the animal. That's from something that we learned before, that Eiver Menachai, when it separates away from the animal, has the same tumah as tumat nevela. Basar Menachai, that's taken off the animal, Basar Menachai is not metamei tumat nevela. So here, if it's classified as being alive during that period of time between the shechita and the mitah of the animal, all you need to do is get off the basar off the animal in that period of time. Because then that basar will be classified as Basar Menachai. And Basar Menachai never is subject to tumat nevela. So Tosafot says that you don't need to get the whole animal down into pieces that are less than a kezayit. All you need is to remove from the animal a basar that's not a full eiver. As long as you're pulling up basar that's not a full eiver, that's basar min achai, and that will never attain tumat nevela. So as long as you pull off all the basar beforehand, no matter how big those pieces are, as long as they're not a full eiver, then there won't be any tumat nevela, as long as you haven't left behind a kezayit worth of basar. So Tosafot makes it slightly easier, but both of them seem to be very difficult explanations. Tosafot also notes over here that the Gemara in other places says that even if you have a chatzi kezayit of nevela, it can be mitzaref with another chatzi kezayit of nevela and then become a kezayit nevela. So why don't you say the same thing over here? Yeah, you cut it up into pieces, but the potential of this item to be mitzaref with something else, then we'll return it to its status of nevela, and therefore you do have tumah chamura. So Tosafot makes a distinction, which is something that's already a nevela, and then it has two chatzik zeitim, that potential to bring them together is enough to call it that sofo tumah chamura, even though right now it doesn't have it, because they were designated as nevela. Over here, when you cut it up into pieces, it never attains the status of tumat nevela. And therefore it would be two stages. You'd be saying that since in potential, it could have been a nevela, and since in potential, if it was a nevela and you put it together, then it would have tumat nevela, that would be sofo tumah chamura. Tosafot said that's too far-fetched. That's not something that we would say. So in a scenario where they are inherently nevela, they're just below the shiur, then we can say the potential to put it together with something else to make tumat nevela makes it that sofo tumah chamura. But here, where you're even stopping the tumat nevela from ever devolving upon the animal, there we're not going to say, well, had you not done that, it would have been a nevela. And now that it would have been a nevela, had you had a chatzi gezayit, it would be potential to put it together with something else and get to mat nevela. We don't go that far to say that. So that's how Tosafot distinguishes between these cases. So Amalei Rabbi Yirmiyahu Rabbi Zeira, Umi Amar Chizkiyah Chalchi. Did Chizkiyah really say this? Now the Gemara is going to ask a question from Chizkiyah himself. The reason the Gemara does that is because that's foolproof. When you ask two statements by the same individual, they need to be reconciled. The truth is that you could have asked from our Mishnah. You don't need Chizkiyah's statement to ask the question. You could have asked it from the Mishnah and it would have been a stronger question. But we don't do that because it's Chizki himself making another statement, and therefore we want to reconcile those two. Va'itmar, shachat ba'shnaim, or rov shnaim. If you shech two simanim, or rov of two simanim, Rashi over here says we're speaking about a behemat me'a, a non-kosher animal. Va'dayin himi farkeset. After the shkita, the animal is flopping around. Chizki amar, eina le'evarim. There's no din of Abram and Achai on this animal any longer. V'yokhan amar, Yeshna le'evarim. The Yochanan says there still is a din of Abram and Achai. What they're referring to is the Ben Noach's relationship to this animal. The Ben Noach is restricted in Abram and Achai. It's a non-kosher animal, so the Jew's not going to eat it anyway, but the Goy can't eat a non-kosher animal. The animal is flopping around. What is the status of the animal during that period of time? If you consider it to be alive, then anything you take off of it is Abram and Achai. Even if the animal dies afterwards, it still will be an Abram and Achai, and the Ben Noach can't eat it. If you consider it to be dead, then there's no more any Ibram and Achai, and the Goy can eat that basar, he can eat whatever is cut up over there. So Chizkiyah says over here that Enalei Varim means that it's not subject to Ibram and Achai, which essentially means that Chizkiyah thinks the animal is dead. That means at the point of Shkita, Chizkiyah thinks it's already dead. In the previous Gemara, Chizkiyah answered, oh, the way that you get this not to have Sofolu Tamei Tumah Chamura is to cut it up between the Shkita and the time it dies, which shows you that he believes that it's alive during that period of time. So that's the stira in the shita of Chizkiyah. Chizkiyah marina le'evarim meitahi, because it's classified as being dead post-shchita. Rabbi Yochanan mar yeshlo le'evarim lav meitahi. There is a problem of evarim inachai because it's not dead yet. How do we reconcile this din with regards to Chizkiyah? So amalei, yotzta michlal chaya, michlal meita lo bat. It is in this twilight state. It's in this in-between status. It is no longer alive. On the other hand, it is not yet dead. So as far as Abram and Achai, there's no more Abram and Achai because it's not alive. For Tumat Nevelah, you need it to be dead, and it's not dead yet. So in that interim stage, it's no longer alive, but it's not dead. So it's not Abram and Achai. It's also not Nevelah. It sits in between the two worlds of Abram and Achai and Meita. And that's how you explain Chizkiyah, reconcile Chizkiyah, and that's also the way you'll reconcile him with our Mishnah with regards to this, that said that there is only Tumat Ochlim in that interim stage, not Nevela. That's because it's not dead, but it's not alive. Gufa. Now we're going to go back to this Braita. Shachat ba'shnaim, or rov shnaim, v'adayinim mifarkesen, it's still flopping around. Chizkiyah amar ein alei barim, there's no Abram and Achai anymore, Rabbi Yochanan amar yesh alei barim. Amar Rabbi Elazar, nakut lahad Rabbi Yochanan b'yadcha. You should follow the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan. Not surprisingly, Rabbi Elazar is Talmid Chaver of Rabbi Yochanan. So he's saying that Rabbi Yochanan's position here makes sense. The Tani Rav Hoshaya Kavate, who's of a braita from Rav Hoshaya, like Rabbi Yochanan. The Tani Rav Hoshaya, Israel. This is the scenario that we've been discussing all along. It's a Jew shechting a non-kosher animal for a non-Jew. Shachat bashnayim orov shnayim, which is the braita that we brought before without that introductory phrase. But if you shecht two of the simanim, or rov of two of the simanim, umifarkeset, and it's flopping around. Mitamat tumat ochlim, it does have a din of tumat ochlim, avalo tumat nevelot, but it doesn't reach yet to tumat nevelot, that even Chizki agrees with, which is that it is post of being alive, it's just not yet a nevela. Both Rabbi Yochanan and Chizki agree with that point. Here is where it's supported of Rabbi Yochanan. Ever ha poresh mimenu ko poresh minachai. Any limb that's taken off that animal is as if it was taken off a live animal, and therefore it has the status of Ever minachai, which would be asur for ben Noach now, and even after the animal dies. Basara poresh mimenu ko basara poresh minachai. And basar that's taken off it is also basar minachai. I mean, the animal is classified as being alive for Ever minachai and for basar poresh minachai, which is like Rabbi Yochanan said, which is there is still Abram and Achai during that interim stage. against what Chizkiah said. Ve'asur libnei Noach. And therefore, both of these items are asur libnei Noach. Afilu l'achasha teitzei nafsha. Even after the animal dies. You can't retroactively change something from Eber Min Achai into Eber Min Avei. Who's taken off when the animal's alive, it always will remain Eber Min Achai. It doesn't change its status when the animal dies. And therefore, Eber Min Achai or Barsara Peresh Min Achai, which are restricted to Eben Noach, will be problematic over here because it was taken off while the animal was still alive. With regards to the Eber Min Achai, it will not only be asur to Eben Noach, but also subject to Tumat Neveila, as we're going to see upcoming in the Gemara. We've noted this a number of times. That Eber Min Achai, at least according to one daya, believes that it has Tumat Neveila. And Basara Peresh Min Achai is obviously still Asur Leben Noach, but it doesn't have Tumat. So they're both Peresh Min Achai, which means they're Asurim for Ben Noach to eat it. The nafkamina between Eber Min Achai and Basara Min Achai is whether it has Tumat Neveila. Now, they're continuing with that Braita. Shechat Ba Echad Orov Echad. Instead of shechting two simanim, he shechted only one siman or a rove of one siman. There is no tumat ochlim over here. Now, this is because it's not shechita anymore. You haven't done shechita. If you haven't done shechita, then the animal's only dead for a ben noach when it's dead. For a Jew, it doesn't matter. It's a non-kosher animal over here. So it's never tumat ochlim because it's not going to eat it. The only time now that it becomes ro'oi la'achila is post the death of the animal. That means at this point there's going to be no interim stage of tumat ochlim. It's just going to have to wait till it dies. And when it dies, it already has tumat nevelot. Nachra, if you do nichur, which is you didn't do shechita, but you did nichur. Rashi has throughout the Masechta mentioned a number of times what nechira is. In some places, Rashi speaks about it being tearing from the nose all the way down to the chest. In other places, Rashi mentioned something about the simanim, cutting the simanim, not derech shechita. One place speaks about strangulation, meaning that Rashi gives different definitions throughout the Masechta. What Nechira is, the key element is that it's not Shechita. Ein ba tumah shel klum. There is no tumah over here. So now, Tosfot over here says, when it says, Ein mitame tumah klum, how's that different than the previous piece of the Mishnah? And he says, Hainu nami ein mitame tumah tochlim. The synonymous was saying that there is no tumah tochlim. The Tani gabi shechav pa siman achad. El mishum do lo asaba derech Shechita, nakad hai lishna. Since you didn't do shechita, it wouldn't even come up to the point where you would think about tumat ochlim. So it's even below. Meaning that you have shechita, which gets you tumat ochlim, you do a proper shechita. You do a subpar shechita, enim etame tumat ochlim means you just didn't get there. You were in the right direction, but you didn't get there. Nechira doesn't even enter the fray over here because it's not shechita, non-kosher animal. There's nothing to speak about in terms of tumat ochlim over here. Bovei kochavim. Now the other way around. You have a non-Jew. Sheshachat behemah Torah Yisrael, that checks a kosher animal for a Jew. Umit farkesin, and the animal's flopping around. Mitamat tumat ochlim, avalu tumat neveila. It has tumat ochlim, but does not have tumat neveila during that period of time. This is the reverse scenario where we said the same thing. Since it's on a kosher animal, shechita is relevant by kosher animals. It's for a Jew, so that has relevance. Deficit over here is that it's a goy that's doing it, which isn't a kosher shechita. Nevertheless, that gives it a status of tumat ochlim, even though it won't be a kosher animal to eat in terms of the shechita. Eiver haporesh mimenu kiporesh min achai. So therefore, in that interim stage between the shechita and the death of the animal where it's flopping around, if you take off an eiver from it, it is considered to be eiver min achai, which means it have tumat nevela, and it'll be asur to a ben noach, and for a Jew as well. Ubasar haporesh mimenu kiporesh min achai. Basar that's taken off it is Basar Min Achai, won't be Tamei Tumat Neveila, will be Asur Leben Noach and Yisrael because it's Basar Peresh Min Achai. Basur Lebnei Noach, and a non-Jew can't eat it. A Jew obviously can't eat it because there's no Shechita over here. It's Shechita of a Goy, so he can't eat it. Vafilu La'achar Shetetzei Nafsha. Even after the animal dies, doesn't change it retroactively that this was Eber Min Achai or Basar Peresh Min Achai. Shachar Ba'achad or Rov Echad, if the Goy shechted one Siman or Rov of one Siman, Einim Etama Tumat Ochlim. Now, again, you failed because you don't have shechita over here. Nachra, again, if he does nechira over here, ain't ba tumat shel klum. Same thing. Ain't ba tumat ochlim. There's no relevance anymore to the world of shechita or the possibility of making it to tumat ochlim. Now, shechat ovei kochavim, b'makom she'en ose ota treifa. The goy started to shech the animal, but he did it in a way where it hasn't reached the point that it makes it into treifa. The classic example means he cut half of the windpipe. The windpipe, in order to be a treifa, has to be rove of the windpipe in order to be a treifa. The goy started the shechita and only went halfway through the windpipe. Ubayisov gamra. A Jew comes up, picks up the shechita and finishes off the shechita. Ksheira. That is a good shechita because the shechita was done by a Jew. Shachat Yisrael. If a Jew begins the shechita, b'makom she'oseh ota treifa, b'makom she'ein oseh ota treifa, whether he does it in a place that makes it a treifa, I mean, he did it until the point it was a treifa, more than halfway through the windpipe, or even a place where it doesn't make it into a treifa, he only went halfway through the windpipe, ba'ovei kochavim megamar shechitato, and a non-Jew comes and finishes the shechita, psula, it's no good, because it was gamar ayidei ovei kochavim, shechita shenigmeret ayidei ovei kochavim, is a shechita psula, and for that reason, it doesn't matter how far the Jew went, whatever the goy did over here ruins the shechita. Either because he did the shechita, because the Jew didn't make it into a treifa, didn't cut far enough, or because when the Jew cut it, he made it into a treifa, and if he didn't finish the shechita, then what he did makes it a treifa instead of being a shechita, and whatever the Ovei Kochamim picked up on is not called shechita anymore, and therefore his first cut made it into a treifa. You saw this back earlier in the Masechta. If you want to eat or simulate the effect of Eiver Min HaChai, you want to eat from an animal before it dies. After you shech the animal, cut out a piece of meat right from the area of the Beit HaShechita. The reason to do that is because you've already severed the head at that point. It's easy to get to the basar. You can pull it off. Umolcho yafeh yafeh. You have to salt it super well. And you have to rinse it or wash it off really well. That's because normally in the death of the animal causes the blood to shoot out and to be exuded, disgorged by the flesh of the animal. So if you leave the animal to die before you're cutting it off, most of the blood would be drained out. And there you just need regular salting and regular midicha. Here, because you cut the basar before that process was done, that means that a lot of the dam is still kept in the evarim, or still in the basar. So since there's extra blood in the basar, you need to do extra salting and extra rinsing to remove that extra blood. Umamtim la shetetei nafsha, and then you wait for the animal to die. Vo'ochlo, and then you can eat it. Echad ovei kochavim, echad Yisrael, mutarim bo. Jews and non-Jews alike are mutar to do this. Now, technically, we said before that a Jew that does shechita, immediately after shechita, the animal is ra'oi le'achila, and you can eat it. Over here, he could have done that. He cut the piece of meat out. He should be able to eat it immediately. There is a separate isur, which is really an isur d'rabbanan, and a smachta from the pasuk lo tochlu al adam, which is a pasuk that Chazal darshan for many different things, one of which is the fact that you're not allowed to eat an animal while it's still alive. Can't eat an animal while it's still flopping around. You have to wait for it to die completely. So here there's an isur d'rabbanan to eat it immediately. That's why the braita tells you, if you want to eat this, wait until it dies. Even though you cut it off after shechita, which is fine, and it's deemed to be dead halachically, nevertheless, mitzad de mius, mitzad lo tochlu al adam, the isur d'rabbanan, you need to wait until the animal dies. Once it dies, then you can eat this piece of meat. But this piece of meat was cut out before it died, so it has a simulated effect of being basar min achai or evir min achai. So that's for a Jew. So there's really no chiddush, because we said before, a Jew, after shechita, the animal's deemed dead, and you can do whatever you want. There's no eiver min achai, there's no problem of eating the animal at that point, except for this din d'rabbanan. The problem is, why is a goy mutar over here? Shechita is not relevant for a goy. Death, the threshold for the goy. So why is the goy allowed to eat from this meat? That goes to a principle mentioned in the Gemara and Sanhedrin. It can't be something is mutar to a Jew, and asur to a goy. So if it's mutar for a Jew, by Migo, it's also mutar to the goy. So he rides on the coattails of the Jew. Since the Jew can eat it, so too the goy can eat it, and that makes it into something that's mutar for a goy. Now there is a question for the goy over here, whether it's mutar immediately for him, or does he have to wait until after Teitzei Nafsha? Since technically the heter of the goy is because it's mutar l'Yisrael. Vido raita, the heter l'Yisrael happens immediately at Shechita. And therefore, maybe for the goy himself, it also should be mutar at the moment of shechita. On the other hand, the Jew is withheld from eating this item because of the isur d'rabbanan. And therefore, the Jew is restricted, I should say, nafsha. Because that additional restriction, mi d'rabbanan, also forced the goy to have to wait until, I'd say, teitzei nafsha. So that's the view of the Rashba, that as long as it's not mutar for the Jew, it can't be mutar for the goy, no matter what is holding it back from being mutar to the Jew. On the other hand, there are others that express a view that the goy is only governed by those dinim d'oraita, but not by dinim d'rabbanan. Because dinim d'rabbanan are, in the classic chatira, they're a din on the gavra, not a din on the chefza. So the chefza is already a chefza of heter for the Jew and shoshu for the goy. The gavra, the Jew himself, is withheld from eating it because of the issur d'rabbanan. But that doesn't mean it should impact on the goy, and therefore the meat should be mutar for the goy immediately. Sayleh Rav Yidi Bavin, this supports Rav Yidi Bavin's contention, the Amar Rav Yidi Bavin, Amar Rav Yitzhak Barashian, I would say Shiavri, person who wants to get healthy. I mean, this is considered to be curative in nature. He cut off a piece of meat from the area where he shechted him, salt it very well, rinse it very well. You wait until it dies because of the problem of lo tochlu al adam. Jews and non-Jews alike are mutarim in it. And the Brayta supports that contention of Rav Yidi Bavin that this is mutar both for Jews and non-Jews alike. And what you're doing works. The reason that we mentioned before in Badaka, Daflam, and Gimel as to why it's curative has to do with this idea that things that have lots of life force in them, when you eat them, they give you life force. So over here, when you eat something that's really fresh, really Eber Menachai, it's efficacious for giving life, for life force to the individual, and that's why it's curative or medicinal in nature. By Rabbi Elazar. Rabbi Elazar asked about the Shechita. Shahaba Doraspa. If he does something during the Shechita that in a normal situation would make it or render it a problem for Shechita, so the Israel that is shechting a Beima Tmeah for a Goy, or a Goy that is shechting a Beima Torah for a Jew. So in the end, the Shechita is not really a Shechita, halachically. Question is, does it still have halachic principles that apply to it? Does Shahah tearing in the Shechita, Daraspa, you pressed on it when you were shechting instead of going back and forth, what type of implications does that have in the Shechita? Mau. Amalei Ostaba, so an elderly gentleman said, Hachi Amar Rabbi Yochanan, this is what your Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan said, it needs to be shechted like a kosher animal. So, first of all, it's clear here that the shechita only works if it is a shechita like a kosher animal. So that's what we were after, which is, what are the rules over here? The rules are, if you want it to be classified as a shechita, to give it the status of tumat ochlim, it's got to be a shechita that would have worked had it been a Jew doing it to a kosher animal. So even though over here there's no halachic shechita, but the effectiveness of shechita to make it into tumat ochlim only works if you did a shechita that otherwise would have luckily been classified as a shechita. And the Gemara says, Hekshar Lamai. What exactly is this Hekshar mean? I understand what it means to shecht like a kosher animal. What does it mean it has to be prepared or primed like a kosher animal? Amar Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, Bidikat Sakin. You have to check the knife. Meaning that Hekshar to do shechita means it's got all the trappings of shechita. Not only do you have to do the shechita properly without anything that would make it a treifa, you either need to do the checking of the knife like you would do in a kosher shechita. An animal that is shechted, flopping around, before the point that it dies, what is the status of the animal? We learned earlier in the Masechta, when an animal swallows kelim, as long as it's inside of the live animal, they are protected from tumah. It's called blua. And therefore, those bluim don't get tameh. So if the animal walks into an oil mate, since it's a live animal with kelim inside of it, they are protected from tumah tameh. So now, the status of this animal between the point where you shecht it and the animal dies, what is its status? Once again, here we're speaking about a Jew shechting a non-kosher animal for a non-Jew, or a non-Jew shechting a kosher animal for a Jew. If it's a Jew shechting a kosher animal, there's no question it's dead once you shecht it, and therefore it will not protect whatever's inside of it. If it's a goy shechting a non-kosher animal, then it is not dead until it dies, and therefore it will protect that which is inside of it. Our question is, with regards to the shechita of a Jew, of a non-kosher animal for a non-Jew, or shechita of a goy, of a kosher animal for a Jew, there where we said that in between it has tumat ochlim, but not tumat velot, how alive is it? Is it alive to the point where it protects that which is inside of it? Or is it really quasi-dead and therefore doesn't protect that which is inside of it? That's the nature of Rabbi Zera's question, Rabbi Sheshet. By me, Rabbi Zera, me, Rabbi Sheshet. Mao shetatzil abluim shetokha amalei. Mitama tumat ochlim umatzelet. If it's mitame tumat ochlim, how can it save what's inside of it? If it's ready to be eaten, then how can it save what's inside of it? Rabbi Zeira responds to Rav Sheshet's answer and says, Amalei, ain't a metama tumat nevelot, velot tatsil? It's not metama tumat nevelot, so then why shouldn't it save it? This goes back to Chizkiah's dilemma, which is, you're not alive anymore, but you're also not dead. So, you're somewhere between alive and dead. How alive are you, or how dead are you? And that's basically the question over here. Each of them making this point from one from the other direction. One of them saying, if it's tamei tumato chleim, that means it's already dead. The other one saying, if it's not tamei tumato velot, it's still alive. So it's somewhere between alive and dead, and that's really the nature of the question. Amar Abaye, so Abaye brings a conclusion. Eina matzalet ala bluim shibitocha. Rashi claims, bichumra. That's a chumra that we don't know what the answer is. So mechumro, that which is inside of it, is classified as being tamei. Da metama tumato chleim, because it has the status of tumato chleim. Va'ruva, someone who performs bestiality with it, chayav. Da ina metama tumat nevela, because it doesn't have a tumat nevela, therefore it's considered to be alive in terms of bestiality. Tosafot does not like this explanation of Rashi, because if it really is that Abai is saying this mitzad chumra, then why is ha'ruva chayav? Ruva is also a chumra, which we would say, yes, we would consider it as if it's bestiality, but you can't be chayav, we can't put you to death based on a chumra if it's not really alive. And therefore, the Balei Tosafot would say that Abaye over here is giving definitive psak halacha, and that is that it is considered to be alive for all things. That means that if you're ruva, if you have bestiality with it, you're chayav midoraita, you can be put to death for it. It's no question that it's alive. Even despite the fact that it's classified as alive, it is a din of tomato chleim, came into batachiloi, because it is something that is subject to being edible or could be eaten over here, and therefore it has tomato chleim. So Tosafot says that Abaye is taking a definitive stand on both issues. He's saying that it is alive for all other halachot. The guy's of tomato chleim, it's considered dead or basically edible, because of the machshava that each individual is having over here, the shechita of the Jew, of the non-kosher animal, on behalf of the non-Jew, he's thinking, where shechita is relevant to the Jew, he's thinking that it's already ochel once it's done. And vice versa, when the non-Jew is doing shechita on the kosher animal for the Jew, there he thinks the shechita is going to be effective to make it into ochel immediately for the Jew. Because of that machshava, it classifies it or transforms it into tomato chleim. And again, if it was really alive, the fact that you want to eat it doesn't change anything. It doesn't make it a tomato chleim, because there, it's in an edible state. It's only because it's already lost the status of being a real live animal, there now your machshava can have impact to transform it into something that's tomato chleim, but it's still alive, and therefore it's not an avela, and also halachically, it will be problematic for the bestiality aspects of it. Although there are those that suggest, in Rashi, that Rashi also agrees with the Balei Tosafot that it's considered to be chayav gamrei, right? And just with regards to matters of tumat oel, there we were machmir l'midrabanan. And that's what it means. We're saying it's the chumra over here, which is it's a chumra midrabanan. And therefore, if someone came into contact with these kelim afterwards, they'd be tamei tumat midrabanan. If they went into the mikdash or they ate kodesh, they wouldn't be a korban because it's only a safek or a chumra midrabanan. But technically, the animal's alive, and that's the real status of the animal, and therefore you wouldn't have to bring a korban in those instances. All right, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Kuf Chaf Aleph Amud Bet.